I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. In the last few months, the deaths of prominent Kansas City personalities, including Plaza restaurant owner John McClure and meteorologist Don Harmon, have brought suicide into the public eye. But many don't realize the extent of the problem. By the time this hour is over, four more Americans will have taken their own lives. Today on the program, the facts and the myths about suicide. We'll talk about root causes and resources available for those struggling with depression. We'll ask how the media can and should cover the issue, plus the stories of those who have lost loved ones, including John McClure's parents, who join us. Also today, Steve Kraske joins us live from Osawatomie, Kansas, where he's preparing to cover the president's speech there this afternoon. It's Up to Date after this hour's news. Good morning, and welcome to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison. Steve Kraske is covering the president's speech in Osawatomie, and we'll talk with Steve in just a moment. Today, we're talking about a topic that regrettably has made it into the news here in Kansas City the last few months, suicide. As Kansas City has been saddened by some prominent figures taking their own lives, national statistics indicate that suicide rates have risen steadily over the last 10 years, that suicide is now one of the 10 leading causes of death in our country. Today on Up to Date, we'll talk with families who have lost loved ones to suicide and with professionals who can help us understand the causes and what we can do as individuals and as a society to prevent it. But first today, we are going live to Osawatomie, Kansas, where our host, Steve Kraske, is on assignment for the Kansas City Star. Steve, good morning.
Brian, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for having me on. The president of the United States is coming to Osawatomie, Kansas, of all places. How come?
Well, yeah, what an unusual situation this is, Brian, having the president come out to one of the brightest of red states anywhere in the country right now. He'll be here about 1 o'clock to speak to a crowd here in the high school gym. You know, he's coming here for, I guess, kind of an unusual reason. He's going to channel Theodore Roosevelt, a president back in 1910 who came here to speak in this very town, just about a mile away from where I'm standing right now in the city park. And Roosevelt came here and gave a speech that received some notoriety because he was very much talking about this gap between the rich and the poor in this country, talking about ways to close that gap, creating an income tax in the country. And he talked about a square deal back in that day. And I think we're going to hear President Obama today, Brian, talk along those lines very much in a very much of a similar way.
Yeah, this all suggests that the White House has in mind for today to be sort of an historic speech. I guess I'm wondering, will the president 100 years from now be returning to Osawatomie because of what President Obama says there today?
Well, I guess we don't know yet for sure. I do think we have a pretty good sense at this point, Brian, of what he's going to talk about. As I mentioned, he'll be pursuing this idea of the gap between the rich and the poor. That's been a theme of the president's very much so the last few weeks as he's gone around the country. I think he'll talk, too, about the need to extend this income tax break that so many Americans have been enjoying through Social Security the last year. He wants to see that extended. Republicans are fighting him on that in Congress right now. Kind of a weird juxtaposition of positions for Republicans and Democrats in D.C. right now. The president pushing for a tax break, a Democrat, Republicans in Congress fighting him on it. We'll see how that plays out in the rest of this week.
Steve, you've obviously covered presidents and major political events for a long time, and nothing is ever simple with these events. What's the scene like there in Osawatomie this morning?
Well, as you might imagine, Brian, people are pretty excited. There hasn't been a day this big, you know, really since 100 years ago when Theodore Roosevelt spoke here. He was a former president then. They had been out of office for about a year, was gearing up to run again in 1912. The mayor of the town yesterday told me maybe this there hasn't been a day as big as in Osawatomie has since then, with maybe one exception, which was the drafting of Lynn Dickey, a former K-State quarterback who's from Osawatomie, to the NFL some years ago, back in the 1970s, I think. But I think a visit from a sitting president probably trumps that.
Little different situation, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
So how many locals will actually get to see the president there in Osawatomie?
Well, I'm thinking 500-600. The gymnasium where we're standing here is fairly snug, Brian. Concrete bleachers. It's not a huge gymnasium by any stretch of the imagination. So I think 400-600 people, locals, will be here outside of the national press pool, the local press pool. Lots of white chairs lined up on the gym floor here waiting for the president. I'm standing on the press riser right now looking into the section for dignitaries, and the Democratic Party establishment, if you can call it that, from the state of Kansas is gathered here today. Joan Wagnon, the state party chair. Sly James, the mayor of Kansas City, Missouri, is here. Bill Reardon, the mayor of the unified government of Wyandotte County, also here today. So it's not a huge crowd of Democratic dignitaries, but they are here.
Well, and you say the Democratic establishment, such as it is, I mean, historical references aside, this is the 21st century in small-town Kansas. It is not exactly prime blue state area. Is there any talk of protests or of an unfavorable reception for the president?
You know, not at all. My editor at the newspaper this morning, Brian, told me that the Secret Service is watching a man in Salina, Kansas, this morning who threatened to come here today to arrest the president for a set of violations in his mind of the national will of one kind or another. And the Secret Service has informed him that if he shows up here today, he will be arrested. But outside of that, Brian, no. We drove, Dave Helling and I drove into town this morning and right through the middle of town on Main Street and didn't see a lick of protest here about 45 minutes ago. So, you know, people here are pretty excited, although even locals will acknowledge that if there was an election for president in Osawatomie, Kansas today, that President Obama probably would lose that election. So, but still some excitement given who it is.
I guess even in a cynical time, or even when there's great disagreement, that that negativity does sometimes go by the wayside when the president comes to town.
Well, for sure. And lots of people saying that even though they don't support the president, they're excited to have him here today. Governor Brownback put out a statement today that, hey, he couldn't be here today. His lieutenant governor, Jeff Collier, is here. But even though the governor couldn't be here, he welcomed the president with open arms to Kansas and said all the right things anyway, Brian.
We should mention that we have a link on the KCUR website, kcur.org, where you can watch the speech live. And remind us, Steve, what are the details? When will the speech be?
The speech is to begin about 1:05 p.m., so just a couple hours from now, Brian. We don't know how long it's going to last, but given the subject matter, I guess we're going to run at least 35 or 40 minutes here today.
That's Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star and the host of this program. Steve, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to join us.
Thanks, Brian.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. You know, it once was too taboo to talk about on the radio, and even now, when prominent figures take their own life, media struggle with how and when to share that information with the public. But there's no denying that suicide is a real and significant problem in America. As the economy continues to struggle, as the holidays approach, many families and professionals are growing more wary that sadness will give way to depression, and depression to suicidal thoughts and actions. Today, we're talking openly about suicide. How big a problem is it, and what causes it, and how can we prevent it? How can and should we all, in the media or in our private lives, talk about this difficult issue? We hope you'll share your stories with us. Have you or a loved one struggled with suicidal thoughts? And if you got past them, how'd you do it? If you've lost a loved one to suicide, what do you think others need to know about that? Share your story by emailing us at uptodate@kcur.org. We'll also take your phone calls a little later in the program. Pleased to be joined this morning by Bonnie Swade of Suicide Awareness Survivor Support of Missouri and Kansas, or SAS-MOCAN. Bonnie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And also Dr. Jason Berman, who's a licensed clinical psychologist. He works with groups and with individuals here in Kansas City. Dr. Berman, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here.
We're also privileged to have with us this morning Marilyn and Gilbert McClure. They are the parents of John McClure, who was the chef and owner of Starker's Restaurant at the Plaza. They've been speaking very openly about their son's death in October. Marilyn and Gilbert, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having us.
I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
You know, your son was a beloved figure to many in the Kansas City community. A lot of people would have looked at his life and thought, here's someone who had everything to live for. What was happening in him?
Well, he was very successful in his work as a chef here in Kansas City, and he had lots of things going on. He was thinking and working at opening even another restaurant in the Westport area. So it appeared to us that he had a lot to look forward to.
As it turns out, he was battling depression. How long had that been going on?
That's really unknown to us. He went through a divorce in 2002, and you know, it was difficult for him, as it would be anyone going through that, but we never saw signs of depression.
Now that you've talked with some of his friends over the years, how much of this do you sense that he shared with other people at all?
He didn't share depression with his friends. Everyone was in complete shock when they found that he had taken his own life. But as we talked with his friends, and we look back, there were signs that we were unaware of at the time.
I know when we were speaking a little before the show, Gilbert, you indicated that you feel like this is something you have to be talking about this.
Oh, yes. Yes, we can't hide it. If we can help one person, it's all worthwhile.
When did you make that decision? I mean, how hard was it to sort of summon the courage and the character to talk about something so difficult?
The day of John's death, I had contacted my pastor, and I said, we need you to be here. And as she was leaving our home that evening, she said, what do you want me to tell people? And I said, the truth, because we cannot heal until we face the truth, and we need to get it out there.
I want to talk more with you, Gilbert, and Marilyn about your story and your experience, but I also want to ask you, Bonnie Swade, who you also lost a son to suicide 8 years ago. Tell us about that.
Brett took his life at age 31. It'll be 8 years this coming December the 20th, and he did have some signs that we realized. He had battled a lot of ups and downs in his life and felt pretty helpless and hopeless. He'd been in the service, also had a divorce. I think he just got tired of trying to make things work for himself, even though he always sabotaged many of his own successes.
And after his death, not only have spoken about his suicide, but you've actually started an organization that works with families, right?
Right. We've started a nonprofit organization called SASMOCAN, Suicide Awareness Survivor Support, Missouri and Kansas. We do a community walk every year. We just finished having a Remembrance Day, and in February, a Healing Day. We, too, did not keep Brett died a secret. Our rabbi encouraged us to just come right out with the truth, and we felt to help other people with the stigma of depression and suicide thinking that we needed to be very honest also.
You know, the statistics are out there. Last ones are from 2008, 36,000 deaths in America reported by suicide. One of the top 10 causes of death in the United States today. Even more so for men, I think the number seven leading cause of death. As you've been working in this area of advocacy and of education for several years now, do those numbers surprise you that they are that high?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm sure they're higher, simply because a lot of families do not want the cause of death considered to be a suicide. Oftentimes, a car accident or accidental overdose, as we hear many times in the news, people don't want to admit to the fact that it was a suicide. So, therefore, I'm not sure that the statistics are ever accurate.
In those 8 years since your son's death by suicide, do you feel like the public's understanding of suicide has changed? Has it evolved at all?
I believe it has. I think there's more awareness out there. It needs to be, you know, even more. But I think that we're certainly moving in the right direction.
Are particular groups at risk? I know I was startled by some of the statistics. For example, in 2009, 13.8% of U.S. high school students reported that they had seriously considered attempting suicide during the 12 months preceding the survey. That's 1 in 7. That's a huge number.
Mm-hmm. Well, even younger kids, there's been some research out there now that shows preschoolers ages 3 and on have suicidal ideation. So it's out there, and no, it doesn't really surprise me. It saddens me.
Well, we're going to talk this morning about some of the basic causes, some of the most frequent triggers of suicidal thoughts and actions. Obviously, this has been something that's been in the news here in Kansas City, not only when John McClure took his life, but also when local meteorologist Don Harmon did so. One of the things that emerged in that conversation was that it was hard to know how to talk about it. The station was reported it slowly, wanting to make sure that the family had received word, but also because it is such a difficult issue. Dr. Jason Berman, who's a licensed clinical psychologist, is here. Dr. Berman, why is this such a difficult issue to talk about?
Well, the first idea that comes to mind is it's a stigma. It's a stigma because, you know, there's a long history of, you know, if you have cancer, there's, you know, not a stigma, it's something in your body. If you have something, other kind of medical illness. But if you're depressed, there's a history of, well, it's because of your character, or it's because there's something wrong with you, or that you're not doing something right. And so there is this idea that if I'm honest about feelings of wanting to hurt or kill myself, then people are going to judge me with, you know, in this kind of stigma way.
We want to invite our listeners to be honest today. If they want to share in this conversation or share some of their own stories or stories of loved ones, you're invited to call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. And again, you can email us at update@kcur.org. Dr. Berman, when does depression cross a line from just from feelings of sadness or despair to being something that really is dangerous?
It's an excellent question. Well, you know, with depression, it can come out in sadness, but it doesn't have to be sad. That is, men can be depressed and not even be in touch with or feel sadness, but they might have lost interest in things that they used to do, or basic life activities are more difficult. And, you know, you sort of think of it as a continuum, that if that, together with stigma, that I'm afraid to talk with others, and then another key issue is isolation. So I'm not going to tell others, I'm going to stay within myself. And what can happen is a snowball effect. And so depression, especially when it becomes clinical, that is, clinical depression is different than sadness or being in a bad mood or, you know, all the difficulties of life. It is when you are gripped with a kind of hopelessness is a possibility, when you have appetite problems, when you have sleep disturbance, when you have problems concentrating and, again, losing interest in things that you've done before. And that withdrawal can then lead to, you know, why keep living? Mm-hmm. And that's where it crosses into danger.
And we'll talk here some about some of the warning signs and things that friends or family can do if they see those signs. I do wonder, though, and we hear a lot about some of the specific times of year or the specific situations that seem to to cause people to be especially prone to suicide. Is there truth to those suggestions? For example, are the holidays the most difficult time?
Certainly, there is something called seasonal affective disorder, which is when the weather changes, it's darker. One can be more prone to sadness and even depression. And what we have is that people who have a vulnerability to be depressed, something like the season, can lead them into full depression. And so absolutely there are situations, seasons, et cetera, like that.
I read on one website that on the other hand, that something like springtime can also be a particularly dangerous time.
Exactly. And that's counterintuitive. You would think, oh, springtime, sun, but not true. You're exactly right.
Why is that not true, Bonnie?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the spring, other than maybe new growth, new beginnings again, and people that feel helpless and hopeless, maybe just don't want to start all over again with those feelings. I would have thought the holidays in January, February, but I was surprised, too, that it was in the springtime.
And just one idea about that. It is true that people who feel deeply depressed might think about suicide, but then sometimes when they feel just a little bit better, they have more energy to actually do it. So I don't know if that's connected, but it makes me think of that.
I want to give this number out a couple of times during the show today. There is a National Suicide Prevention Hotline. The number is 1-800-273-TALK. That number is also on our website at kcur.org. You can call that at any time, 24 hours a day, and is one way that people have come together to try to prevent suicides in the U.S. One other statistic that seems sort of startling to me is the way that suicide rates have been steadily increasing each year, really since about 2000. And I wonder if there's any speculating or evidence about why that is. Is it the war? Is it the economy? Or is it something else?
It's a good question. It's hard to answer questions like that because there are multiple factors. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to just say, well, one thing.
Sure.
So those are good thoughts. You know, I'm not sure about current events and relationship to that.
I think we've just are more aware of suicide now. I mean, it's been going on since humankind. But we are more aware. We talk about it more. It's come more into the public light.
Well, let's take some calls. I want to invite our listeners to be part of the conversation. You can share your story by going to the KCUR Facebook page. You can also tweet your comments or your questions to at KCUR up to date. Let's talk to Marie in Kansas City, Missouri. Marie, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling up to date. What's your experience with this?
Well, I am somebody who has, in my 20s, was quite suicidal and have a history of suicide in my family. And I guess the two things that I would say is, one, to the families of people who have ended up killing themselves, I know that there is a lot of it's so devastating, and I just would like to assure them that somebody in that kind of depression just cannot bring to mind what's going to happen to the people who live. And the other thing is, I guess one of the things I did in my 20s was tricked myself in a way that I decided to believe that if I committed suicide, I would be reincarnated to the same life. And somehow I was like, you know, I can't start all over. So things are all good today. And, you know, I have seen a psychiatrist and proper medication for people who need it. And I just consider myself lucky.
Well, Marie, we're grateful for your being with us and also for your willingness to talk about it. Thanks so much for your call.
Thanks.
You know, Gilbert and Marilyn McClure, Marie included some advice to families who have lost loved ones. I imagine you've received a lot of advice over the last couple of months. What's that like to be in that position? Is it helpful?
Oh, just having people recognize it, speak out and give us an opportunity to talk about it, I think has been very helpful. It's a healing process that you go through, but just the fact that they have shared what they've been through or, just the comforting aspect of it as well.
We'll talk more as this hour goes on about ways the impact of suicide on families as well as resources that are available to them. Let's take one more call from Michael in Kansas City. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Thanks for your call. What's your question or comment?
I had a question for your guest. I believe she was the founder of SAS Mocan. I heard her mention that she lost her son on December 20th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I lost my brother when I was in high school. He was 16 and I was 15, and it was very hard for me to go through. It still is to this day. He died on December 3rd. It's just very difficult to go throughout the holiday season, even to this day. And I haven't been able to find a way just to go throughout the season. And I was wondering if she had any advice on how to deal with the holidays and being happy about the holidays, but also, remembering or trying to get through the loss of your loved one.
Well, I think you have to keep in mind that things have changed and it's a new normal, and you can't go back and do traditions and things that you used to do. It would be a good idea. I mean, we have changed things up a little bit. If you had a family dinner, maybe go out to dinner. If you went to church on Christmas Eve, maybe go during Christmas Day. You have to find new ways and new traditions to make them yours.
Is that helpful, Michael?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure it's a process. So.
Yeah, it's definitely a process. Well, thank you. It wasn't a suicide, but I really thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And thank you for your call, Michael. We had a question on our Facebook page from Larry. He wrote, how does a pastor console or offer peace to a grieving family in a time of suicide? Dr. Berlin?
Yeah, I think the first thing would be to listen non-judgmentally. This is not a time that you say, try to give reasons or this is what your loved one was thinking. It's really a time to say, I want to hear your story, from a really, I'm going to be open to you. And if it gets too much, then it's really important that the person, go to a therapist, psychologist, and because there might be and there is likely some really deep feelings that need to be discussed, as I talked about. One should not be in isolation. So anytime there's connection, whether individual or group, that's really valuable and healing, but some good things.
On that note, we had an email from Rex who said, I would encourage people who are responding to the news of someone's suicide to please, please not be critical. My 54-year-old sister committed suicide, and an aunt would tell everyone how selfish she had been. And my response was that no one can know the desperation that might lead one to kill themselves. Marilyn McClure, I know you mentioned talking with your pastor shortly after John's death, and you also mentioned that I know that you're also a lay minister yourself.
Yes, I am. I'm not as active as I once was with it, but I think that background has been very helpful. And I also wanted to share that when we had John's memorial service in Tescott, Kansas, that his pastor that was there during his junior high and high school years did the service, and he directly addressed suicide. And I think that helped probably 500 people there that day to have it spoken
name
to
it
them.
Out loud.
Name it.
I'm going to continue. Oh, go ahead, Gilbert.
He also said, and when I learned of John's suicide, I was so mad. I wanted to hit something. And this same pastor said, if someone had took John's life, you'd be mad at them. Mm. So it's all right.
It's okay to be mad.
Yeah.
And as far as carrying on, the suicide is a negative to me. So I kind of push that aside and all the beautiful memories.
Yeah. We're going to continue to share some of those memories and continue our conversation about how not only to notice the warning signs, but also to do something about it, how we as individuals and as a society can respond to the very real problem of suicidal thoughts and actions. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay with us after this local news headlines update. And welcome back to the second half of Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske today. If you missed yesterday's conversation about how greater freedom in the workplace can increase a business's growth and profits, you can find that along with any other programs you may have missed on our website at kcur.org. Don't forget, tomorrow on Up to Date, the Techsperts will be back to discuss the latest in technological developments and news. They'll also give us their holiday gift-giving guide, so join us tomorrow at 11 on Up to Date. Today we're talking about suicide, about causes, and about ways to prevent it. We're talking with Bonnie Swade of SAS-MOCAN, Suicide Awareness Survivors support, thank you, SAS-MOCAN, that's Bonnie Swade, and also Dr. Jason Berman, who's a licensed clinical psychologist. We're also joined by Marilyn and Gilbert McClure, the parents of Starker's restaurant owner and chef John McClure, who took his own life in October. I want to talk, Dr. Berman, about some of the warning signs, some of the key things that should concern people when they see them in loved ones or in friends. What are some of the things that you most need to be watching for?
It's a key question, and, you know, very explicitly, if someone is talking about wanting to die, you take it seriously. You know, looking for a way to kill oneself, like search on the internet, what are some, you know, ways to do that? Feeling hopeless, having no reason to live. I mean, people will talk about this, and always keep in mind, you can ask about it. Don't avoid that. If you hear that from a friend or loved one, don't, you know, shy away. You know, talk about it.
I've heard that sometimes people are afraid to mention the word suicide for fear that it'll put an idea into someone's head.
Exactly, and that's a myth. That is a myth. If it's there, you want to connect with that person. It's, you know, you want to talk it out, not have it be inside.
You're not going to be the one who gives them the idea. The idea is already there.
Exactly. And in a deeper issue, Brian, is that we as people are not omnipotent. Mm-hmm. We can be available to people. We can reach out to them. But we can't stop something that, you know, we can do our best. And so other things are talking about being a burden to others, talking about feeling trapped. You know, I have unbearable pain, or my life is like a black hole. I mean, these are significant. And then also acting recklessly, acting anxious or agitated. A significant one is alcohol and drugs.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask about that, Bonnie, in your experience with these issues, how big a factor is alcohol and drug use in people who are contemplating suicide?
Well, it's definitely out there because it dulls their feelings or their pain. I can only speak from our particular son, and that was he was into alcohol and drugs. He fought that most of his life.
Mm-hmm. We have quite a few callers who want to talk about this. 816-235-2888 is the number, although the lines are full, so you're welcome to also send us an email at uptodate@kcur.org. Beth in Kansas City, Kansas, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for holding on so long for us. Tell us your comments or thoughts.
My name is Beth Yetterstein. I'm with Wyandotte Center in Kansas City, Kansas, but I'm also a mental health first aid trainer, and I was hoping to get a little information out there about this new program. It's called Mental Health First Aid, and it's designed to give information to the public how to address, how to approach, how do I talk to somebody with depression, and it's designed specifically for somebody in your core, in your circle of friends. May it be your family member, in your church, or just somebody who's close to you. It's a 12-hour program. It's huge. We cover other areas, but depression, anxiety, suicide are some items that we talk about.
And so how do people call on this first aid? How do you get access to it?
Actually, they can call my number through Wyandotte Center, if I can give that number, and we have trainings throughout the year. We are also offer to come out into the communities and come to organizations. We offer it at our site that individuals can come if somebody wants to come by themselves. But is it okay to give my number?
Yeah, go ahead, Beth.
It's 913-328-4633. We have flyers. We have more information if anybody is interested in it. Like I said, it is a 12-hour program, but the wealth of information, and such as your guests have entered today, we give them strategies. How do you approach somebody? I think one of the most frightening questions is, how do you ask somebody, are you thinking about killing yourself? We give them some tools to work with, how to approach somebody, what to do if you're concerned.
Great.
Some questions to ask.
Great, Beth. That's very helpful. Thank you for sharing that, and good wishes to you and your work. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
We should mention, by the way, that we'll have links to several resources, including the organizations and the offices that our guests today work with. And also, let me give again the National Suicide Prevention Hotline number. That's 1-800-273-TALK, or 800-273-8255, and that also is posted at kcur.org. Go to the up-to-date page. Let's talk to Kathy in Kansas City, Missouri. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wish I would have known about Beth's training years ago. I have an almost 16-year-old son who's suffered from clinical depression for about 5 years now. And, as a mother of a young teenager, that's been very, very difficult to grasp. But my hat's off to professionals at Children's Mercy, because I've had him with a clinical psychiatrist and clinical psychologist for years now. And sometimes we have to go to our psychologist every week. But the tools they give him to cope with his feelings are invaluable, and I believe have saved his life to this day.
Hmm. Thanks for sharing that, Kathy.
I just want to make a comment
about
that.
Jason Berman.
She makes an excellent point that to have a therapist or psychologist – research shows that if you have a relationship with that person, that leads to healing and growth. So what does that mean? You can find a licensed, psychologist, social worker, counselor. But the important thing is that you're able to connect with them and really open up about what's happening with you. And if the first person isn't a match, then you go to someone else. And then just a comment about money. I have a private practice, but I also work part-time at Jewish Family Service. And the reason is because anyone should have the ability to have a therapist, whatever their money resources are. And a place like Jewish Family Service and other places offer that as a way of connecting with a therapist. So excellent point.
And do I also understand that if you are with someone who is acutely considering suicide, you can even take them to any emergency room, right?
That's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
We received this email from Kat. I've been depressed almost my entire life. The first time I remember considering suicide, I was 4 years old. I want listeners to understand that this is an illness. I have a chemical imbalance in my brain, and it is potentially deadly. Please don't look at me or my life and ask me what I have to be depressed or suicidal about. I can't answer that, and the question itself shows bias against the reality of how this affects me. Bonnie, you mentioned earlier that even very young children sometimes have suicidal thoughts, and it reflects not just not just the circumstances of life, but what's going on in their brain.
Right. A lot of times they don't even, as she said, she doesn't even know why she's depressed sometimes. Things might be going well for a long time, and all of a sudden she just goes on a downward spiral, and she can't really put her hand or on it, what's going on.
Let's talk to Bill in Olathe. Bill, good morning. Welcome to Up to Date.
Oh, thank you for having me this morning, Brian. I just wanted to make a comment. I guess my thought regarding suicide, and I do a lot of work with people that are suicidal at Johnson County Mental Health on the crisis line, and as well as the Johnson County Mental Health Center Olathe office. And the point that I wanted to make about suicide is not about dying. It's about stopping something. It's about stopping some pain that's going on in one's life. Because there's a lot of ambivalence about actually doing something to end your life, and the body really fights hard to stop you from doing that. And as by example, there have been several people that have jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge, and of the survivors that have survived that, the minute they let go, they had several reasons they could find to continue to live.
Interesting.
And so my comment just and finally is that what I do is I don't take away the person, the idea that, well, I'm having thoughts of suicide. I don't take that away from them. But what I do do is set up a safety plan with them, assuming already that they're going to have the thoughts and that I want to work with them and connect with them. Just as Dr. Berman had mentioned earlier, just that connection and that relationship with them oftentimes will help them to have that reason to continue to live and offer other options a person, you know, to continue to live.
And, Bill, what when you say a safety plan, what do you mean? What's the – I can ask Dr. Berman as well. What are the elements of a safety plan?
The elements of a safety plan is the you give the person the crisis line number, you give them some crisis appointments that I have available here at the mental health center. You can identify supports in their lives. Oftentimes, the person hasn't told anybody else in their life that they're having thoughts of suicide, so get them connected with those folks and that they can identify as people that are supportive in their life. So each plan is different, but the key point in it is getting people connected with those that really care and that are really interested in keeping them going.
Bill, thank you so much for your call today.
Thank you.
You know, we've been talking a lot about the impact on individuals of being depressed or of circumstances, but the families of those who have committed suicide really have a lot to endure in the immediate experience of the death, but in months and really in years to come. We had a comment on our Facebook page from one of our listeners who said, "My son Kevin committed suicide in December of 1994 at age 27. So this would be almost 7 years ago. One of the aspects of having a family member commit suicide are the feelings of guilt. And obviously our listener is still feeling that way even some time after his son's death or her son's death. Marilyn Gilbert, how have you been processing this as you have watched time passing since John's death?
Well, on the day after John's death, that morning I got up, and the first thing I said to Gilbert was, this did not happen because we did not love him enough, because we did love him enough. And I think that's really important for close family, you know, loved ones when they lose someone, is it's not your fault. There probably was, there's help out there, but it's not your fault. You do not have to take responsibility for what they have done. It's very difficult to put that all aside and deal with your grief. But I think that's very important. The first thing you have to do is say, you know, I did not cause this because I didn't love them enough or I didn't do enough for them.
And it's good that you are in a strong enough and a healthy enough place that you can say that.
I'm sure there's people out there who probably didn't love their spouse or child enough and are dealing with guilt. But it's still suicide comes from within. And I really think if we will identify it as a disease so that we can talk about it, as I have mentioned before, that we talk about pancreatic cancer, we talk about breast cancer, that we didn't talk about those things years ago. Mm-hmm. And look at the strides we have made to find prevention and cure. And if we will deal with depression and thoughts of suicide in the same manner, maybe we can help people become healthy too.
Yeah. 816-235-2888 is the number to call to be part of our conversation about suicide and its causes and about prevention and about its impact on families. 816-235-2888. Bonnie, as you've worked with families, I'm curious, how different is the experience of grief in losing a child to suicide or a spouse as opposed to another kind of death? I'm thinking of an untimely death, like an accident or a heart attack for a very young person. How is it different in cases of suicide?
Well, I believe it is different in the fact that that person, whether they were in a stable frame of mind, which we would say they were not, still made that decision to end their life. You can't control if you get a disease, if you have diabetes, if you get cancer, but we tend to believe that we can control living. And that's, I think, what makes the difference.
And then why it's so much harder.
And why it's so much harder, because you love that person and you just can't understand what about their life is so bad that they would make that decision.
You know, I'm interested. One aspect of the some of the recent events in Kansas City has been that we've had sort of prominent figures, John and also Don Harmon over at Fox 4 News. And as word was spreading fairly rapidly in the community that his death had been a suicide, the station wasn't reporting it on their airwaves. And in fact, they read a statement basically saying that they could not say more, and they were asking people to understand. And that was because they were taking time to make sure his family knew. It raises a question about how suicide is treated in the media and if it should be treated differently than it is or different than other kinds of death. Obviously, this is all very this is a developing concept, particularly as media changes, as there's social networking out there. How does public discussion of suicide affect the issue of suicide?
Well, the idea that comes to my mind is a group trauma, right? If someone, you know, someone at Fox 4, you know, kills himself, the whole group is traumatized, mm-hmm. you know, and the whole family, or earlier talk about the family, is traumatized.
And not so, just the family at the station, but the family of the audience.
Oh, absolutely. The first thing I thought of when I heard it is, you know, someone who used to watch Don with their daughter, you know, for 10 years, that person has a connection. Mm-hmm. And that is a type of loss and trauma, I think, even to Kansas City as a whole. So how you talk about it is doing something just like this. We're dialoguing about it. We don't want to separate. We want to talk. And so I think that's what we do.
Yeah. I'm curious about things like Facebook and Twitter as well. And I turn to you, Gilbert and Marilyn. I didn't know John, but I know many people who knew him. And I think I learned of his death just a few hours after it happened by the comments that friends of mine were making on Facebook. And not only that he died, but how he died. It was mm-hmm. it was out there very, very quickly. I'm wondering if you have a sense of how important that set of connections is for how we're responding to his death in these days and months after.
Well, with Facebook, it certainly doesn't take long for any kind of news to spread, and something of that magnitude spreads very quickly. But the good thing about it is we've had contact with so many people that we wouldn't have ordinarily had contact with, and just, you know, extending their condolences and stuff. And I just feel like It is a good thing that we talk about it, because if we had said from the beginning, John died tragically and not said suicide, I think we wouldn't be having this dialogue today. Mm-hmm. And the same with Don Harmon's family when they said, you know, yes, we have to put it out there. I know many of our friends on Facebook had made the comment when they heard that Don had died, how it just brought it all back to them the day that John had died. And I'm sure that happened with anyone who's lost a loved one to suicide, that it just brings it all back again. And it started, you know, my comment to the family of Don Harmon was, I understand where you are. And I think there's, you know, we just have to reach out to those who are going through it and cling together at this difficult time.
Let's take one more question from Bill in Overland Park. And, Bill, we just have a few seconds left.
Yeah, real quick. I've got a 20-year-old son who, on the last couple of years, has just continued to just decline from performance in classroom to work. All the characteristics you all describe about depression are evident. The challenge I have is trying to get him to go to counseling and seek someone to connect to. What suggestions do you have for a parent in my situation?
For a parent who has concerns about their child, how do you convince them to enter therapy?
Well, you talk about what they can learn there and that it's confidential and it's a space for them to heal. And you can't force them because force therapy doesn't go very far. But that's what you do.
I am so very grateful to all of our guests. But before I say thank you to them, Gilbert, you mentioned to me before the show that on February 15th, a number of chefs in Kansas City are coming together. That's sponsored by the Boulevard Brewing Company. Is that right? And proceeds from that event will benefit suicide prevention.
Yes.
And awareness. We'll have more information as we get closer to that date and try to bring that to you here on Up to Date. Thank you so much for being with us. Bonnie Swade of SAS MOCAN, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Jason Berman, from who's a licensed clinical psychologist here in Kansas City, thank you for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
And Gilbert and Marilyn McClure, thanks so much for spending time with us this morning.
You're so welcome.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You can find more information about all our guests and our schedules and our podcasts at kcur.org. Join us for tomorrow's program when the Techsperts present their holiday gift-giving guide. We had help today from KCUR's Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kim Noble, and Maria Carter. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. Steve Kraske will be back tomorrow. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.